Hi, my name is Rabbi Avi Heller. Welcome back. Together we are learning Masechet Megillah. We find ourselves in the last chapter of Megillah on page 26a. That's Daf Chaf Vav Amud Aleph. We are right in the middle of the page. In the skinny lines, it's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14 lines up in the skinny lines. Right in the middle of the page. This series of recordings is a joint project of the OU Department of Synagogue Services, OU Torah, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. What we've been talking about is whether or not you're allowed to sell a synagogue, and when you sell that synagogue, what you're allowed to do with the money. So the Mishnah suggests that when you sell an object that has holiness, you may only use the money to buy an object that has higher holiness. The rabbis discuss whether or not you can use the money to buy something of equal holiness or not. Some say yes, some say no. But there may be some limitations on whether or not you're allowed to sell a synagogue at all. Rabbi Yonatan, in our previous recording, said that you could only sell a synagogue if it was in a village and it had a specific number of owners called the Bnei Ha'ir, and they could decide to sell it. But if it was in a larger town, like a krach, then it really belongs to the public. And since the public cannot... It doesn't have a voting body, so to speak, then basically you can never sell such a synagogue. However, we've seen a number of stories where it seems like they did sell synagogues under certain conditions. Now we're going to ask a question that is a little bit on a side tangent. And the topic we're going to be dealing with, again, is the topic of tzara'at, which is leprosy, a leprosy-like disease. Now, one of the differences between leprosy and this disease of tzara'at is that tzara'at could affect a house. So that's what we're interested in. It could affect a house, and it could affect a synagogue. So maybe we can learn something about the sanctity of synagogues based on whether or not they could be affected by tzara'at. So meitve, we have a question. The verse says in Vayikra, chapter 14, Bevet Eretz Achuzatchem, that tzara'at can only affect houses in a land that in an area of the Holy Land that is an achuzah, meaning it is a tribal land. So it has to belong to one of the shvatim. Achuzatchem mitame b'negaim, so anything that is in your tribal inheritance can get negaim, that is tzara'at. Ve'ein Yerushalayim mitame b'negaim, but the city of Jerusalem cannot, none of the buildings in Jerusalem can get tzara'at. And the suggestion we're going to make there is the reason is that the Tanakhama holds that Jerusalem doesn't belong to any of the tribes. It's a, so to speak, corpus separatum, as the United Nations wanted to make it an international city. So it's not exactly an international city, but it is a neutral territory that doesn't belong to any of the tribes. And since it doesn't belong to any of the tribes, it's not an achuzah. Since it's not an achuzah, it is not subject to getting nigaim. So even if the buildings looked discolored in a way that looked like tzara'at, the halacha would be that tzara'at doesn't apply in Jerusalem. Now we have a different opinion. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, ani lo shamati. Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't have such a teaching. I never heard this. Ela makom mikdash bilvad. I only heard that the Beit HaMikdash itself cannot get tzara'at. In other words, he seems to hold that Yerushalayim does belong to the tribes. It's only the temple itself that is not subject to the rule of tzara'at. Ha, we can infer from Rabbi Yehuda, batei kenesiot ubatei midrashot, that the synagogues and the study halls that were in Jerusalem, mitamin, they could get tzara'at. And if that's the case, well, here's the question that Gemara is going to ask. Amai, but how could they get tzara'at? Ha dekrachin havu. They belong to the city. If they belong to the public and they don't belong to individual landowners, they also can't be an achuzah. They can't be someone's tribal inheritance because they don't belong to one person. They belong to the public. Now, I don't know if it's a good question or not, because even if they're part of a tribe and they belong to the public, maybe something that belongs to the public can still be subject to tzara'at. I don't know. The Gemara seems to assume not that way. So, Ema, I would say that let's reinterpret Rabbi Yehuda. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, ani lo shamati, when Rabbi Yehuda said, I don't have such a teaching, ela makom, instead of makom mikdash, we change it to makom mikudash bilvad. Not just the place of the temple, but any sanctified place in Jerusalem. What's a sanctified place in Jerusalem? Well, yes, the temple, the Beit HaMikdash, but also a Beit Knesset and a Beit Midrash would also be considered sanctified places. And I think what Rabbi Yehuda is saying is that he has a different criterion for whether or not Tzaras applies to a building. Although the Tanakhama was interested in whether or not it was an achuzah, whether or not it belonged to someone in a tribe, Rabbi Yehuda feels that anything that is a sacred place, a makom mikudash, is not subject to Tzaras either. So they are arguing about two different criteria for what would involve Tzaras. And what he's basically saying is that even if the Beit Knesset belonged to the public, it still wouldn't be subject to Tzaras because it is a holy place. Now, once we've staved off that question, so now that question doesn't bother us related to our sugya of the synagogue in a city, but now we're interested in what's the root of the machloket between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda related to Jerusalem. So we ask, b'mayka mipalgi, what do the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda disagree about? What is their dispute? Tanakhama, that's the abbreviation, Taf Kuf is Tanakhama. The first opinion, Savar, he holds by reason, Lo nitchalka Yerushalayim lishvatim. Jerusalem was not divided up into the tribes. So the reason why Tzaras doesn't apply in Jerusalem is because it doesn't belong to any tribe. For Rabbi Yehuda Savar, and Rabbi Yehuda Savar is Nitchalka Yerushalayim lishvatim, that Jerusalem does belong to the tribes. So based on that criterion, the house, the study halls, and the synagogues should have gotten Tzarat. But since Tzaras doesn't apply to holy places, that's the separate reason why the synagogues and study halls would not get Tzaras in Jerusalem. But the real distinction is about whether or not Jerusalem is a neutral zone or a tribal zone. Ubeplugta dehani tanai, and this plugta, is related to another dispute, dehani tanai, of these tanaim, these sages of the Mishnah. Ditanya, as we learn in a braisa, mahaya bechelko shel Yehuda. What part of Jerusalem was in the tribal portion of Judah, of Yehuda? So the Braita teaches, Har Habayit, the Temple Mount, meaning the mountain itself, Halashachot, some of the office areas, Veha Azarot, and some of the courtyards were in the section of Yehuda. Okay. Umahaya b'chelko shel Binyamin, and what was in the portion of Binyamin? Ulam, the entryway to the holy building of the Beit HaMikdash, the Heichal, and the sanctuary itself, that's equivalent to the Kodesh, the holy area, Ubeit Kodshei HaKodeshim, and the Holy of Holies. In the Beit HaMikdash, as opposed to the Mishkan, there were three holy sections. The Ulam was the outer section, the Heichal was the middle section, and the Kodesh HaKodeshim, the Holy of Holies, was the holiest section. So all of those sections, the holiest areas, were in the section of Binyamin. Now, according to this opinion, clearly the Temple Mount itself and the Beit HaMikdash belonged to two different tribes. Part of it belonged to Yehuda, and part of it belonged to Binyamin. So according to this opinion, it would sound like that Jerusalem was given to the tribes. So the teaching goes on, Uritzua haita yotzeit mechelko shel Yehuda. There was a strip of land that went out from the section of Yehuda, v'nichneset bechelko shel Binyamin, and it entered into the section of Binyamin. So ordinarily, the boundary between the tribes would be a straight boundary, or pretty much a straight boundary. You would draw a line between the section of Yehuda and Binyamin. But here you have kind of like a gerrymandered district. Instead of a straight line, there's like sort of a little bulging section. There's a strip that you draw into Binyamin, you know, that sort of encroaches on Binyamin's territory. And that little gerrymandered section belongs to Yehuda. Uba, and on it, Mizbeach Banui. That's where the altar was. Now, according to this teaching, it sounds like the altar was actually in Yehuda's section, which is not true. We'll get to that. We'll get back to that in a second. V'aya Binyamin HaTzadik mitzta'er alaha b'chol yom, and that section in which Yehuda was encroaching into Binyamin's territory, bothered Binyamin every day. He was very upset about it. Libola, he wanted to swallow it up. He wanted to get it back, meaning he wanted to create a straight line between Yehuda and Binyamin and get rid of that little ritsua that was extending into his territory. Shenemar, as it says in Moshe's blessing to Binyamin, Chofef alav kol hayom, which we're going to interpret as he worried about it. Chofef means to hover and to hang around, that he was worrying about it every day. And the rest of the verse says, Uvein ketefav shachein, about this section that's in between his shoulders. So just like right in, your head is right in between your shoulders, Yehuda's little strip of land was right in between, right in the middle of Binyamin's territory. Lefikach, therefore, since Binyamin was so upset and wanted to have all the holy parts in his territory because he loved holiness so much, Zacha Binyamin v'naseh ushbizchan l'shchina. Binyamin merited that he would be the host. Ushbiz here ushbizchan means to be the one who hosts l'shchina, to the divine presence. It's only in question whether this means that he would be the host of it in the first Beit HaMikdash, the second Beit HaMikdash, or maybe it's a special blessing that he will get it in the third Beit HaMikdash. But in any regard, the truth is that the Mizbeach itself is actually in Binyamin's territory. What is meant here by a little strip going out of Yehuda into Binyamin's territory is probably not the Mizbeach itself. It either means the very edge of the Mizbeach, and this would mean the eastern edge of the Mizbeach, or else it means the whole section to the east and to the south of the Mizbeach, depending on how you draw it. So because Yehuda's territory encroached right up to the edge of the Mizbeach, the section, the western edge of the Mizbeach, didn't have a base, meaning the Mizbeach was put on top of a base and there was like an ama around it, like a little ledge around it. But in the territory of where Yehuda's territory came right up to the edge of the Mizbeach, there was no base. And Binyamin wanted to get a little more area so that he could have the full Mizbeach and a base without having Yehuda coming right up against the Mizbeach. According to another version, in Zvachim, not only did Yehuda's territory come up all the way to the western, to the eastern edge of the Mizbeach, but also the southern edge of the Mizbeach. And the truth is that there's no base on either the southern or the eastern edge of the Mizbeach, because in those areas, Yehuda's territory comes right up against the Mizbeach. It would be helpful to have a picture, but since this is an audio recording, I cannot help you out with that right now. Okay, according to that whole opinion, the area of the Temple Mount, the Beit HaMikdash, belonged to the tribes of Yehuda and Binyamin. So it is given over to the tribes. V'hai Tana, the other sage of the Mishnah, Savar, he holds by reason, Lo nitchalka Yerushalayim l'shvatim, that Jerusalem was not given over to the tribes. Ditanya, as we learn in a Braita, Ein maskirin batin b'Yerushalayim mipnei she'einan shelahem. You were not allowed to rent out your house in Jerusalem. So this is very interesting. You know, obviously it's a great market when on the holidays, you know, Sukkot, Pesach, and Shavuot, when people were ole l'regel, they would go up to celebrate the holidays in Jerusalem. So Jerusalem must have gotten extremely crowded, and it would have been a great opportunity for people to, you know, Airbnb, or, well, that's a bad example, but to rent out their houses to all the visitors. But what we're saying is that it was not permitted for them to charge money. They were expected to host people in their homes, but not to charge money, mipnei she'einan shelahen, because those houses don't belong to them. Anyone who lives in Jerusalem is not living in a tribal area. They've bought a home that is in Jerusalem, and in a way, it belongs to Jerusalem, not to them. So Reb Elazar Bar Tzadok, and according to the Tosefta, Reb Elazar Bereb Shimon, Omer says, Af lo mitot, not even, they couldn't even rent out beds, because even if they owned the beds, they didn't own the land on which the beds were. Lefikach, therefore, Orot Kodshim Balei Ushpizin Notlenotan Bizroa, the hides of the animals that were brought as karbanot, as sacrifices, sometimes the owners got to keep those hides, and the balei ushpizin, the innkeepers, would sometimes take those hides as payment for renting the rooms. And it says they took them bizroa, by force. So either it means that things were not, I mean, it doesn't sound great to me. I think the whole idea of staying in Jerusalem was, you know, that there should be achdut and unity between Jews and friendship. And here you have a situation where people seem entitled to stay in other people's homes and they didn't like it that much. And so they were trying to take payment, but they weren't really allowed to take payment. It sounds like a disaster. So it sounds like some of the innkeepers did charge some kind of rent, and either they did it against the law or else they did it unscrupulously. That's what he seems to be saying. Amar Abaye, Abaye sort of takes the edge off, and he says, Shma Mina, learn from this, Orach Ara, that it's Derech Eretz. Orach Ara in Hebrew means Derech Eretz. It's the polite thing to do. Lemishbak Inish, Gulfa Umashcha, that a person should give to their host. A gulfa means some kind of a ceramic, a houseware, umashcha, and a hide, but ushbize, to his host. So basically here we learn that when you go to someone's house for Shabbos, or you stay over just for house for Shabbos, that you should bring a house gift. So Abaye is basically saying the polite thing to do is, if you're not paying rent and you're going to stay in someone's house, you should bring them a house gift. And then you can avoid having all of the homeowners and the innkeepers feeling badly about the fact that they can't charge rent, and then, you know, some of them might charge rent anyway, which is against the law and creates bad feelings. Okay, so that ends that section. That's that machloket about whether or not Jerusalem belongs as a neutral territory that doesn't belong to any tribe and to any person, or whether or not it belongs to the tribes of Yehuda and Binyamin. Now, we've been discussing Rabbi Yonatan's opinion that the only synagogues that can be sold are those that are in villages, not those that are in towns. Now we're going to have a separate conditional statement attached to the Mishnah by Rava, two lines up from the bottom. Amar Rava, Rava said, Lo Shanu, the Mishnah only taught that you cannot, that you can, when you sell a synagogue, that you can only use the proceeds for things of higher sanctity than that which you sold. Ela shalom machru shiva tove ha'ir, in situations where the tove ha'ir have not sold it, b'ma'amad anshe ha'ir, with the authority of the people of the city. Aval, but machru shiva tove ha'ir, but if the tove ha'ir sold it, b'ma'amad anshe ha'ir, with the authority of the men of the city, afilu lemishtia be'shichra, I'm now on chavav mudbed, even for drinking beer, and the Hagos HaBach adds in here, ula mishtach bepere, and for setting out fruits, either to dry or to sell, shapir dami, then it can be sold. Well, let's unpack what this means. First of all, the Mishnah said b'nei ha'ir, that the people who sell the synagogue are the b'nei ha'ir, and I suggested that those were landowners or original owners of the town. Here we have a different group of people, the Shiva Tove Ha'ir, the seven wise men of the city. And this was a institution that existed a long time ago, where you had sort of a town council made up of seven people who had authority to rule the town and to set its rules. Like, for instance, they were the ones that determined how much tzedakah every person had to give and when it had to be given, and they had a certain amount of power and srara over the people of the town. Some of the Rishonim think that the B'nai Ha'ir and the Shiva Tuve Ha'ir are the same people, but that's a little problematic in the flow of the Gemara, because Rava seems to be modifying the statement of the B'nai Ha'ir. So it's possible that they are a different group. In other words, the B'nai Ha'ir may have been the actual landowners who have some rights related to ownership of the synagogue, whereas the Shiva Tovi Ha'ir, whether or not they are landowners or owners of the synagogue, they have authority as a sort of a government, a quasi-government that's been that is elected, even if they're not exactly elected, appointed to run the affairs of the town. And what Rava is saying is that if there are seven elders who are the town council and they have authority over the town, that they can decide to sell the synagogue whenever and however they want to. And when they use those proceeds, they can use them for whatever they want to, even if they want to take the money and spend it on beer or on fruits. They're allowed to do that. That's how some people read it. Other people say that they can take the synagogue and sell it, even if the people that are buying the synagogue are going to turn it into a tavern where people drink beer, or into a marketplace where people sell fruits. So obviously you don't want your synagogue, which is a holy place, to suddenly become a a beer hall, but they're saying if the Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir think that that's the right thing to do, they have the authority to sell it and to allow the profits to be used for that purpose. Okay, we're going to stop here at the very top of Chaf Vav Amud Bet, and we'll continue in our next recording. Have a wonderful day.